All right, here we go. Psalm 107 is where we're going to be this morning, if you want to turn there. Of course, Thanksgiving is approaching a little early this year. There's an early Thanksgiving on November 22nd. We're used to it being way in the toward the end of the month, but here it is on the 22nd. You know, Thanksgiving is celebrated in many countries around the world. It's always celebrated around harvest time, and it has something to do, of course, with the harvest and all, as it does here in the United States, and you know, the thankfulness at the harvest. But there are two interesting ones that I read about. In Japan, it's celebrated around this time. I think the set day is November 26th, something like that. And it's celebrated as a Thanksgiving for labor. It's sort of their Labor Day. And in Grenada, which is in the Caribbean, they celebrate Thanksgiving on October the 25th. And the reason they celebrate Thanksgiving on October the 25th is not for the harvest. That is the day that the United States invaded Grenada and deposed the socialist government there. And they celebrate that as a Thanksgiving, that they were out from under the rule of that guy. So that is their Thanksgiving Day. There has been some form of Thanksgiving in the United States since the country was formed. And in 1789, President Washington issued the first nationwide proclamation, and he said this, we want to celebrate November 26, 1789, as a day of public thanksgiving and prayer to be observed by acknowledging with grateful hearts the many and signal favors of Almighty God. Today, when we talk about Thanksgiving, it's not quite the same. It's more just of a holiday, and sometimes it's just a prelude to Black Friday and to Cyber Monday or whatever it is. It's all about shopping and all of that, and you have President Roosevelt to thank for that, but that's a whole other story. This morning, I didn't want to talk about Thanksgiving, the holiday. I wanted to talk about the concept behind that, and that is thanks. And I wanted to base this on Psalm 107. And I'm going to read the whole chapter. It's a rather lengthy reading, but you know what? It's David's psalm, and it's worth reading sometimes. So if you'll follow along with me, Psalm 107, and this is the New International Version. You notice I don't have my Bible this morning. Part of what happened this morning was the young man that I was talking with didn't have a Bible, and I gave him my Bible. I figured I got plenty of Bibles and I figured there might be one down here at the building, so I could probably find one. But this is the New International Version. Psalm 107. Give thanks to the Lord, for He is good. His love endures forever. Let the redeemed of the Lord say this, those He redeemed from the hand of the foe, those He gathered from the lands, from east and west, from north and south. Some wandered in desert wastelands, finding no way to a city where they could settle. They were hungry and thirsty, and their lives ebbed away. Then they cried out to the Lord in their trouble, and He delivered them from their distress. He led them by a straight way to a city where they could settle. Let them give thanks to the Lord for His unfailing love and His wonderful deeds for men, for He satisfies the thirsty and fills the hungry with good things. Some sat in darkness in the deepest gloom, prisoners suffering in iron chains, for they had rebelled against the words of God and despised the counsel of the Most High. So He subjected them to bitter labor. They stumbled, and there was no one to help. Then they cried out to the Lord in their trouble, and He saved them from their distress. He brought them out of the darkness and the deepest gloom and broke away their chains. Let them give thanks to the Lord for His unfailing love and His wonderful deeds for men, for He breaks down gates of bronze and cuts through bars of iron. Some became fools through their rebellious ways and suffered affliction because of their iniquities. They loathed all food and drew near the gates of death. Then they cried to the Lord in their trouble, and He saved them from their distress. He sent forth His word and healed them. He rescued them from the grave. Let them give thanks to the Lord for His unfailing love and His wonderful deeds for men. Let them sacrifice thank offerings and tell Him of His good works with songs of joy. Others went out to the sea in ships, They were merchants on the mighty waters. They saw the works of the Lord, His wonderful deeds in the deep. For He spoke and stirred up a tempest that lifted high the waves. They mounted up to the heavens and went down to the depths. In their peril, their courage melted away. They reeled and staggered like drunken men. They were at their wits' end. Then they cried out to the Lord in their trouble, and He brought them out of their distress. He stilled the storm to a whisper. The waves of the sea were hushed. They were glad when it grew calm, and He guided them to their desired haven. Let them give thanks to the Lord for his unfailing love and his wonderful deeds for men. Let them exalt him in the assembly of the people and praise him in the council of the elders. He turned rivers into a desert, flowing springs into thirsty ground, and fruitful land into a salt waste because of the wickedness of those who live there. He turned the desert into pools of water and the parched ground into flowing springs. There he brought the hungry to live, and they founded a city where they could settle. They sowed fields and planted vineyards that yielded a fruitful harvest. He blessed them, and their numbers greatly increased, and he did not let their herds diminish. Then their numbers decreased, and they were humbled by oppression, calamity, and sorrow. He who pours contempt on nobles make them wander in a trackless waste. But he lifted the needy out of their affliction and increased their families like flocks. The upright see and rejoice, but all the wicked shut their mouths. Whoever is wise, let him heed these things and consider the great love of the Lord. Of course, as I mentioned, this is a psalm written by David. It begins with an encouragement of giving thanks to God, but especially for those who are of the redeemed, those people who have partaken of God's mercy and goodness. Those are the ones who should be thanking God the most, those who have been gathered into the presence of the Lord. Of course, he was talking mostly about the nation of Israel at that time. He was there. That's the context of it. But if you look at it in a broader sense, you look at the meaning of this, he is talking about all of God's redeemed, both then and now, those who have been pulled away from the world, those who have been separated from the world, those who have partaken of God's goodness and mercy. And the rest of the psalm can be taken that way. This is a very beautiful psalm, very poetic, very wonderful thoughts that are there. And it's structured to address various groups of people, to address the actions that they have taken in their lives, to address God's reaction to their actions, and then address their response to God's reaction to them. The first group that he's talking about starts in verse 4, where it's talking about the wanderers, those who are wandering in the desert with no place to live. They're hungry. They're thirsty. And of course, when we look back at the history of Israel, we know that they did wander in the wilderness for quite some time, for those 40 years at least, and they would wander again as the time went on. They cried out to God for deliverance, and God provided every time they cried out to him. He showed them his mercy. And for that mercy, they should give thanks. As David says, for he satisfies the longing soul and fills the hungry soul with goodness. Now, I don't know about you, but when I think about Thanksgiving, I get hungry. I'm thinking about all those great things that we're going to have on Thanksgiving. You know, the turkey and all of the, you know, I like the Watergate salad. I don't know if y'all like that or not, you know. I feel sneaky when I'm eating it. Some of y'all get that. But I like a lot of stuff, you know, and you kind of get hungry. We're looking forward to our favorite dishes. And those favorite dishes are not only good, but they're prepared by someone who has prepared them with love and out of the goodness of their heart. Well, the physical feeding for the Israelites was just the same, wasn't it? God provided them with manna, and he provided them with water from a rock. And that was out of God's goodness and God's mercy. But they needed more. And God provided that for them multiple times. He provided them with his guidance. He provided them with his word. He provided them with his law. And we need more too. We are longing to be filled with something beyond ourselves. Jesus talked about that in the Beatitudes in Matthew chapter 5 and 6. Blessed are those, we talked about this a little bit this morning, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be filled. And with what will they be filled? Well, Jesus tells us that in John 6:35. I am the bread of life. He who comes to me shall never hunger, and he who believes in me shall never thirst. What a comforting thing to think about, that if we can turn our lives to Jesus, that we will not be hungry, that we will not be thirsty. And remember, the Samaritan woman at the well heard Jesus talk about this living water that he had for her. And her first reaction was, give me this water that I may never thirst again. She didn't want to have to come to this well and pull that water up from the well anymore. But he gave her the living water, which was himself, which was his word. Have any of you ever here been really hungry? You ever been really, really hungry? You ever been really, really thirsty? It's a terrible feeling when you think about that. But there are times when you get really hungry. My kids, when they were younger, they had heard us talking about, you know, starving. I'm just starving. I'm starving to death, you know. Well, they misinterpreted that, and they always used to say, I'm starving for death. So that's become our little family joke, you know. Whenever we're hungry, I'm starving for death. And sometimes we get that hungry, don't we? We're not going to starve, but we are really, really hungry. You ever been on a long trip? You ever been away for a long time and you're eating at restaurants and all this sort of stuff? You get tired of it after a while, don't you? It's good food, but you get tired of it. You get tired of McDonald's. You get tired of any other place. And what you say a lot of times is, I could use some good home cooking. That's what we want more. Is he not tired of McDonald's yet? I bet you are, though, aren't you? Well, that's good. What we say is, I could use some good home cooking. We're looking forward to getting back. We have been wandering far from home, and sometimes it's difficult to be really filled when we're away from home because we want that good home cooking. Well, the same is true spiritually. When we're wandering around away from God, we are hungry spiritually. We are empty spiritually. We are thirsty spiritually. And you know what? God longs for us to be home with Him. He offers us the sustenance we need spiritually, and He offers us what we need, the guidance we need to return to Him through His goodness and His mercy. And as David says to those who are wandering, looking for the manna, looking for the food, looking for the spiritual things, give thanks to God because He has given us the sustenance we need. He has given us the guidance we need. The second group that he addresses is, starting in verse 10, those who are bound, those who are prisoners. David says those who are prisoners by affliction and by irons, by chains. And I believe it here in the NIV, I did my lesson on the New King James Version, so it's a little different here in the NIV. Some sat in darkness in the deepest gloom, prisoners suffering in iron chains. And that's the way it is sometimes for people. He might be speaking of those who are suffering from the effects of their sins. And sometimes that's what happens. You've done something wrong and you have to suffer the consequences for what you've done. But that can be spiritual and physical, or it can be both. There are people out there, and sometimes we've been in the same fix, who are trapped in lives away from God. And they're trapped away from Him because of their own decisions. They have rebelled against God and have rebelled against His counsel. That's what he's talking about here. That's the type of people that he is talking about. When you look at Israel, you can see that that happened a lot with them. They were going along just fine, but then they decided we can do it our way. We don't need to follow God. We can follow after this idol or that idol, or we can just ignore Him altogether. And so, again, they were away from Him. They were rebelling. And we can look around at the world today and we can see the effects of that taking a hold right now. This world is descending into chaos, and we know that. There are people that are pulling away from God. They are pulling away from His Word, and they are pulling away from His counsel. But you know what? They've been doing that for a long, long time, haven't they? And they will continue to do it. But we are looking right now at this country, and we are seeing the effects of the people that are pulling away from God. I think I've mentioned this before. You know, I saw on my Facebook page one time somebody had put something about a lot of people are asking why in the world God, where was God during the school shooting? Well, God wasn't there because we didn't want Him there. And that's the problem that we have sometimes. Sometimes God says, okay, if you want to do it, you do it yourself. Y'all have done that with your kids. You did that with your kids. Oh, you think you know how to do that? Well, here, you go ahead. You try it. You give it a try. And that's what God says to us sometimes. If you don't want my counsel, I won't give you my counsel. You know, one of the saddest examples that I can think of along these lines is I saw an interview. It's a guy that goes out and he interviews people, and it was on the beach in California, which is a great place to find some weird people. But he was talking to him, and one of the things that he was talking about gay marriage, and he was talking about the fact that, you know, people said it's okay to do all this if they really love these people and all this sort of stuff. So his question was, what if it was a brother and a sister? And they decided that they loved each other. And they took all the precautions they needed to, and they just went ahead and had a relationship. Would that be okay? And you could see the wheels. I mean, you could almost see the wheels turning around in their heads, thinking to themselves, well, it sounds wrong. I know it's wrong. But if I say it's wrong, I'm trapped. And so they had to say, well, if they really love each other, it's okay. And you can tell that it didn't sit well with them, but they just had to say that. And I wonder if later on, when they got home, when they really started thinking about it, that it changed their minds a little bit. I don't know. These are those who might be categorized in the statement in verse 17, where he says, they've become fools. As one commentator that I read was talking about this, he says it doesn't mean that they're mentally deficient. It means that they are morally deficient. They are trapped and sick. Sick in their hearts, sick in their minds. They would agree that this was okay because they are where we are termed sick in their minds toward those moral consequences. And that is becoming more and more prevalent as we glide down this slippery slope. I don't even know if we're gliding down it anymore. I think we're just rushing headlong down the slope. But people do wake up. And a great example of that, of course, is the prodigal son. The prodigal son who believed he could do it all on his own, he didn't need help. Of course, it's kind of funny, he did need help, didn't he? Because he had to have his father's money when he went away to that far country. He just didn't take care of it when he was there. And then he was trapped in his own desires, and he turned away from the guidance of his father and the counsel of his father, and eventually he woke up in a pig pen. And he decided, this isn't the place I want to be. And so he decided to go home. And when he went home, his father was standing there with his arms crossed, scowling at him, saying, do you know how much you hurt me? Do you know how much you hurt my mother? Do you know how much how much wrong you've done in your life? No, he didn't. The father was there with welcoming arms. As a matter of fact, it tells us he ran out to meet him. He welcomed him back home. And it's the same here. We need to give thanks to God that he has saved us out of the distresses, that he has broken the chains in pieces. Think about that for just a moment. We are trapped in these chains of sin. We are prisoners of our own desires. We are spiritual prisoners because of our arrogance and our rebellion. And God not only takes the chains off, he tells us he will break the chains. If you break the chains, what happens? You can't use them anymore. Y'all remember when you were kids and you had those handcuffs, you know, that were about a dollar and a half, and you would do this one time and they break. You couldn't use them anymore, could you? Well, that's what happens. God says, I'm breaking the chains. You don't need to use these anymore. When I think about prisoners, I think about something that Zechariah said in chapter 9 and verse 12. Return to the stronghold, you prisoners of hope. Even today I declare that I will restore double to you. Thanks be to God that he is in the restoring business, even with people who rebel against him and don't want any part of him. Well, the third part that he talks about, the third group that he talks about is those who are overwhelmed by situations. And I think it's interesting that he couches this and uses an example, people who go down to the sea in ships. We're talking about sailors, aren't we? These are men and women who go down to the sea and they get on these boats and they go out in the ocean and they sail across the ocean. They can see as they're out on that ocean the majesty of God every day. They see the oceans, they see the sunrise, they see the sunset, the clouds, the rain, and all those things. They see all those things every day. Now, Bob was a sailor. Bob, were you on a ship, actually on a ship? You were? Did you ever get tired of looking at the ocean?
No, I haven't.
Okay, well, good. Bob's not going to be a good example. There are people who will go out there and they will take this for granted after a while. It's so amazing to begin with, but then after a while, you just kind of take it for granted. I went on a cruise, you know, this past August, and it was July and August, and it was really fun, you know. And one of the things about it is when I was sitting there on the porch, I was looking out that ocean, and I was just thinking about the majesty of God and how wonderful it was to see all of these things, this ocean that was so beautiful. And to think that the place that we were crossing over was just about as deep as Mount Everest is high. It was just absolutely amazing to see the sunset and the sunrise and all the clouds and how we would pass through a rainstorm. You know, we would go through it and then it'd start raining and about 15 minutes later we're through the storm. It's just absolutely amazing when you went through that. And it was a pretty smooth ride, by the way. We just had one time when we were rocking a little bit. But last week I saw a video and I thought, I'm going to click on this and see what it's like. It was about cruise ships in the middle of storms. I'm going to tell you something, that's pretty scary. These people are on these cruise ships, and they had like 40-foot waves. And there were some people who were taking videos. They had lower deck rooms. And as the ship went down, the water from the ocean actually came up above their portholes. Thank goodness they were watertight. But, you know, you're looking at all this and you're thinking, wow, that's really something. And then they had some more video of some people who were in one of the common halls, you know, one of the dining halls. And it's really something. You can see the ship go this way and all the furniture does this. And the people are standing there doing this, holding on to everything. And then the ship goes this way and it all comes back. And it's furniture, chairs, tables, everything, pianos even. They're just rolling back and forth across the floor, pitching back and forth. Well, you know what? Our lives get that way sometimes, don't they? Our lives begin to rock back and forth. We get caught in storms of sickness, storms of pain and doubt and despair and depression, and storms of sin. And we have all ridden on those emotional waves. There's not a person in this room who hasn't at one time or another ridden those waves. From the highest of the high to the lowest of the low. And sometimes it only takes 5 minutes for that to happen. Sometimes it takes a few days, but we just ride those things. And what we do is we're like the sailors in Jonah, who were just, you know, mariners who went out all the time. And as that storm hit, they cried out to their own God, "Save us." And then there were the disciples who were in the middle of the lake, and Jesus was asleep in the bottom of the boat. And when they couldn't fight the storm any longer by themselves, they finally went to Jesus and said, woke him up and said, "Save us." And that's when Jesus calmed the storm because he heard them. Our Savior, when we call out to God, may not come like that. It may come in the form of a doctor. It may come in the form of a family member or a friend, someone who's going through the same trials that we're going through. I remember when Gracie had her anxiety problems, she wouldn't go to school. I mean, she just literally would not go to school. And it was just so tough because you know how you are as a parent. You want to be the meanest parent in the world, but then you can't do that. And sometimes you lose your temper, and I, you know, God forgive me, but I did that sometimes. But you know, we ended up having to take Gracie to court to make her go back to school. We filed truancy charges against her because we wanted to make sure she understood that she needed to be there. You don't know what it's like until you're sitting in a courtroom and your 12-year-old daughter is sitting at the defendant's table and the judge is talking to her. But one of the things we had to do, she had went on probation, and one of the things she had to do was had to go to the Gwinnett County Jail. And they had a class there for everybody, and they took them on a tour of the jail. Now, while we were there, of course, we had to drop them off because we couldn't go in with them. But it was really something because I realized Grace is not the only one who has this problem. And there was a lady there that I talked with, and her son had the same problem. It was so bad that he actually was held back a couple of grades because he wouldn't go to school. I didn't have it as bad as she had it. I thought it was horrible, but she had it much worse. And this is why we have support groups, so that we know that we're not alone, so that we know that everybody else has these problems. You know what else? This is our support group. We've all gone through trials. We've all gone through tribulations. We've ridden up on the height of that wave, and we crested that wave, and we've ridden down to the bottom of it where the water is above the porthole. And we think we're going to drown. But we are not alone. God has given us our fellow Christians to lean on, to talk with, to pray with. And when all of that fails, He is still there for us. He will hear us. He will calm the storm. He will calm the fear that fills our heart. You know, when you're at sea, out in the middle of the ocean, you can't see anything, can you? There's just a horizon out there. And you're trusting that the captain knows where he's going. I always thought it was really funny. You think about the explorers, you know, Magellan and all these guys and Christopher Columbus and all. They had no idea what was going to be out there. I'm sure some of those sailors actually thought, man, we're dead now. We're going over the edge of the ocean. By the way, that's why he had three ships. He was in the last one. If the first two went over, he could turn around and go back. A lot of people don't know that. But the thing about it is, these people were really, really brave to be able to do that. They believed that there was something over the horizon. God wants us to be brave. There is something over the horizon. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you, I go to prepare a place for you. That's what Jesus told us in John 14:2. Paul said this in 2 Corinthians 5:1, for we know that if the tent that is our earthly home is destroyed, we have a building from God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. If only we could always give thanks for the blessings, sorry to use that phrase, for the blessings of His presence when the seas are rough and when the seas are calm. Well, the last portion of this psalm talks about the cycles of life and how things happen. The rivers dry up, the lands become barren. The rivers come alive again, the land flourishes. Back in the 60s, Frank Sinatra released a song called Cycles. I always loved that song. And it was really a cool song because he talked about how life had its ups and downs, how it had its wins and its losses, how it had its good and its bad. And that's where the title Cycle came from. But you know what? We all want ups, don't we? We all want to win all of the time, and sometimes we're Auburn fans. I'm sorry. That was pretty mean, wasn't it? Yeah. We all want to win all of the time. You can get me back when you get up here later on. We all want good things to happen in our lives, but that doesn't always happen, and it's not always going to happen. The redeemed, the righteous people understand this. Those outside don't. David says he pours contempt on princes and causes them to wander in the wilderness where there is no way. Those who reject the guidance and wisdom of God are those who continue to wander, who continue to not understand God, to not understand His guidance. Sometimes they don't want to understand. They don't care to understand. They are not the prodigal. They are the ones who give up and give in to the world. And what about the righteous? Well, David tells us that the righteous see it and rejoice, and all iniquity stops its mouth. Whoever is wise will observe these things, and they will understand the loving kindness of the Lord. The righteous understand that, as Jesus said, that God sends the rain and the sun on the just and the unjust, and the righteous should be thankful for either one that comes their way. In verse 22, David says this when talking about those who are healed. Let them sacrifice the sacrifices of thanksgiving and declare His works with rejoicing. Now that's a reference to Leviticus chapter 22 and verse 29. When you offer a sacrifice of thanksgiving to the Lord, offer it of your own free will. We talked about free will offerings a little bit last week when we were talking about peace offerings. And as with that one, the sacrifice of thanksgiving is free will. We have to want to do it. If you thank God because you feel like you have to do it, it's just kind of empty, isn't it? Have you ever felt like you owed somebody a thank you and you didn't want to give it to them, but you gave it to them anyway? Thank you. Thanks. You know, it's half-hearted. God doesn't want that. God wants us to thank Him for the blessings. He wants us to want to thank Him because we understand where they do come from. There are lots of complaints about Thanksgiving and how it's lost its meaning, and that's very true. But you can't make anyone be thankful. Those people that, you know, pay attention to all of this other stuff, they're not going to be thankful just because we tell them to be thankful. It has to be from the heart. And as indicated here in Psalm 107, it's something that comes out of our experience. Good experiences and bad experiences. So I got some questions for you. What are you thankful for? What are you thankful for? Why are you thankful for it? Why? Has there been a time in your life when God has brought you through a crucible of pain, of heartache, of loneliness, and despair? And are you a better person for it? We can all think about it. You know, we all want to think about the blessings that we've had the last few weeks, the past few days, the past month, maybe even the year. What about those blessings that happened 10 years ago that are just being born out now? that are just blossoming in our lives. Psalm 107 talks about two types of problems: the problems that are brought about by circumstances beyond our control, and then those that are brought about by our sin. I can look at my own life through 20/20 hindsight, and I can see that there are a lot of problems that have been in my life that I caused, that were my fault, that I suffered consequences because I rebelled, because I didn't seek God's counsel, because I didn't seek His guidance. But you know what? I'm a better person for it, because I learned some lessons, some valuable lessons. We all need to be thankful for everything that God gives us: the pain and the pleasure, the sadness and the joy, the defeat and the triumph. That's what David's talking about here in Psalm 107. Whoever is wise, let him heed these things and consider the great love of the Lord. He restates that in Psalm 69:30 when he says, I will praise the name of God with a song and will magnify Him with thanksgiving. This week, as we look at Thanksgiving, that's what we need to think about. I'm going to be thinking about food, by the way. I don't know what we're going to do this year because my father-in-law's in a hospital. I don't know. It's going to be pretty crowded in his room at the rehab center if we have it there. So we'll have to figure something out. They may actually let him out for a day. We're hoping that that might happen. But you know what? Every day, I want to be thankful to God for what He's given me in the past and what He's going to give me in the future, and especially for that home that He's going to give me in the future. This morning, if you have a need to answer an invitation, we're going to offer that to you right now while we stand and sing.